This is the Daily Perspective Podcast for Wednesday, March 17th, 2021. Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host, for this daily dose of observation, insight, and absurdity. How you doing? I hope you are well. I hope that all is well with you and yours. And that if you live in the what are normally sunny Southlands, you're keeping a weather eye out because it's going to be a bumpy day here in the sunny Southlands. It is the Wednesday edition of the podcast. We're halfway through the week. We've made it this far. And if we behave ourselves and we're good boys and girls and we wear our masks and social distance, maybe we'll get to Friday. It's a bizarre day in the neighborhood we call the United States of America. Those who seek global dominance are taking advantage of many things to try to destroy our nation. And that's not paranoia. It's not conspiracy theory. All of the things that we have heard, if you're in the same age group I am, we've heard these things all of our lives about a one world government, about a new world order, about there have been various names for it over the years. And now it's being called the Great Reset. I haven't really talked about this before because it's one of those things that unless you have a lot of material to back it up, it just sounds like you're a raving conspiracy theorist when you talk about it. And I got to be honest with you, when I have read others' reports on the issue, I thought, yeah, okay. I understand you're unhappy and you don't like the way the election turned out and you don't like the way things are going at the border and you don't like what you're seeing happening in Washington, D.C., but to go global and to assign this nefarious value to all of this stuff is a bit much, don't you think? I can't say that anymore because to be just gut level honest with you, what we're watching play out right now through this Biden administration is the next step in what we were told about years ago, back when Barack Obama was running for president, if you recall.
We are 5 days away from fundamentally transforming the United States of America.
And I know this is a drum I have beaten very frequently, but I need to remind you that when he said those words, we hear about dog whistling. Well, he was doing more than dog whistling to the globalists. He was dog whistling to the globalists and saying, it's time. It's time. I've also played this one before you in the past for you. But just listen again. Here's this one.
Change will not come if we wait for some other person or if we wait for some other time. We are the ones we've been waiting for.
He was talking to people who firmly believed that they were the ones who would change the world. And this is a very common political ploy. It's happened again and again and again. Our values are going to change life as we know it. That's sort of an underlying theme of every political campaign. We're going to set us back on course again. We're going to change course. You and I, we are the people. We are the ones who are going to make life good for everybody. It's sort of a common theme. So we all sort of shrugged it off as, yeah, well, it's the ways that they see things. They think they're going to have their way and it's going to make things great. But every time they've tried what they want, it's always failed. And do I have to go any further? No, I don't. I really don't. The thing is that right now we are watching on the world stage, we're watching something play out, which has been predicted for a long time. and it's finally happening. A lot of the pieces were put into place on the chessboard over the years. A few here, a few there. Things shuffled around. This pawn moved out of the way. This bishop moved into place. This knight set where it needs to be. And now these people are beginning to make a push towards victory. And they're trying to institute something they are calling right now the global or the Great Reset. And they took advantage of a pandemic in order to frighten everybody into a position to grant them more power to do what they want. And they were successful. And here in the United States of America, they used that to make a change to the government of a nation, which has resisted this steadfastly for generations. But behind the scenes, there have been people who have been working on making this happen. And they finally had their opportunity. This pandemic hit, which honestly, if you do enough digging and if you look at it, you squint hard enough and you look at it, it starts looking like even the pandemic, even the coronavirus was a plan. And I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I'm not one of these guys. If you listened to the Mark and Max show back when we were doing talk radio, you know that I was the one who would also always say, yeah, you've been on those sites again, haven't you, Dave? Because I was that guy. Dave was the one who would say, well, you know, and he would take off on stuff. From time to time, we would have fun with things like chemtrails and stuff like that, because we knew that it would kind of stir people up and they'd say, oh, you don't really believe all that, do you? And others who would say, oh yeah, man, I mean, I ain't been well a day in my life since they started spraying chemtrails over our place. And we would hear this kind of stuff, and it was kind of fun to play with that. But I was always the one who would say, you've been on those sites again, haven't you? But you don't have to go to those, I'm air quoting, those websites anymore to see the fingerprints of what's happening. Because it's becoming more and more apparent to those of us who've been sort of paying attention for a while that what we've been feeling at a gut level, that something is not right and you can't put a finger on it, is getting bigger and badder by the day. Our gut feeling is starting to take shape and take form. And when the head of the Catholic Church, the Pope, uses the phrase Great Reset, as he did in a document released yesterday. It's in Italian, but you can find it translated in English. When he talks about the need for the world to have a Great Reset and to take advantage of the pandemic to do so, then you know certain things are afoot. And one of the things happening here in our nation, in the United States of America, is that our system has to be destabilized. If you've studied Cloward and Piven, you understand their philosophy about overwhelming a system so that it breaks down. And when it breaks down, you blame old thinking for the problems, and you devise a new system which works under Marxist principles. It's just a way of instituting communism, is basically what it is. We're watching that happen on our southern border right now. We're watching migrants flood the border. At no time in history have there been as many children in confinement as there are today. They're in unhealthy conditions. It's far, 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 far worse than it ever was during the Trump administration. And yet no one is saying much about it. It's starting to get a little bit of attention, but not enough. And people aren't pointing fingers in the right direction. It's to the point now that the politicians can't deny it's happening. It's so bad now, the leftist news networks can't ignore it anymore. So the Democrats are blaming it on Trump's inhumane border policies to deflect from the Biden administration's feckless handling of the situation and the fact that it is now worse now than ever before in history. On the surface, it really does look like it's feckless. It's stupid. But when you look at the people involved and you look at their worldview, you begin to understand that, no, this is actually reasoned and designed to be this way. Because they want the system to break. They want the system to fail. They want the system to come apart. And yet, they trot people out like tipsy Aunt Nancy to excuse everything. And the other day, Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas quoted the movie Billy Madison in response to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's assertion that the Biden administration inherited a humanitarian crisis at the border from former President Donald Trump. It doesn't matter that he instituted policies with the Central American nations, which gave them incentive to keep people from flooding our border. It doesn't matter that he did that, but the Biden administration voided all of that and then telegraphed the fact that they were going to void all of that back in December and started the flood of people once again, which is now hitting our borders. So it doesn't matter. None of that matters. On day one of his presidency, President Joe Biden set out to dismantle President Trump's border policies. He issued an executive order that terminated Trump's declaration of a national emergency at the southern border and defunded construction of the border wall. Now, in a response to a surge of illegal immigration, the Biden administration will deploy the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, to the border to assist with processing the children, an effort that won Pelosi's praise. Sunday on ABC News, tipsy Aunt Nancy blamed Trump for the growing crisis on the border, as more than 4,200 unaccompanied migrant children are in custody of Customs and Border Protection, with nearly 3,000 kids being held longer than the legally allowed 72-hour period. By the way, that's closer to 13,000 now, just in the last couple of days. CBS News reported Sunday that the Customs and Border Patrol apprehended an average of 565 unaccompanied minors per day just last week. Pelosi told ABC News, "What the administration has inherited is a broken system at the border, and they're working to correct that in the children's interest. I'm so pleased that the president, as a temporary measure, has sent FEMA to the border in order to help facilitate the children going from one, the 72-hour issue, into where they're cared for as they are transferred into family homes or homes that are safe for them to be." Appearing on Fox and Friends Sunday, Senator Cotton reacted to Pelosi's comments and the Biden administration's announcements regarding FEMA, mocking Pelosi for suggesting Trump is to blame for Biden's policies, saying, "At no point in that rambling, incoherent answer did Nancy Pelosi even come close to expressing a rational thought about what's happening at the border. What they inherited from the Trump administration was a border that was closed. We were building a wall. And we were turning away all migrants who had no right to cross into our country." He continued, the Biden border crisis, though, was created by Joe Biden's promises of amnesty and open borders and free health care for illegals during his campaign. That's why border crossings have increased every month since the election. And now the Biden administration is sending FEMA to the border. They are, by their own declaration, admitting it's a disaster. The only thing he didn't say was, "And we're all dumber for having heard what you had to say," which he probably should have said. The situation is bad, but the situation is bad by design. The Biden administration wants the system to fail, and they want to blame it on everybody but themselves. It's the Daily Perspective Podcast. for a midweek edition. It's the Wednesday edition, March 17th, 2020, 2021, 2020, 2020, 2:20, 2:30, whatever it takes. It's a bumpy day here in the Birmingham, Alabama area. We have severe weather warnings. And actually, they've closed some schools. Announced closings and early closings, and some businesses have done so because they're looking at it being pretty rough here today. So, after I get through with the podcast, I'll be going to the corner of the garage and strapping myself to a pole. Yes, I'll take the dog with me. It's talking about the border crisis. It is design. It is by design. It is intentional. It seems like with everything coming at you at the same time, it's hard to get a grip on what's really going on. You have to ask yourself, why would the administration do something so dumb? They can't be that dense, can they? They can't be that stupid as to think, oh, well, we're all going to be one big happy family, and everybody's going to come live here, and we'll take care of all of these poor people because they're oppressed. Because, you know, we're just a good country, we're good people, and it's just good, good, good for us to do good things for the rest of the world. That's not why they're doing it. They're doing it because, one, the globalists don't like borders because they believe there should be one world. And that's not conspiracy theory. Just do some digging and you'll find it's been said by politician after politician after politician when they think they're talking to the right crowd. Now, if they're on the talking head shows on Sunday morning on network TV, they shy away from that kind of language. They phrase it different ways, but they still believe this. And this is common on the worldwide scene as well, because there are those who believe that this should be a planet under a socialist government. This is what they believe. This is something we've been told, as I said earlier, for as long as I can remember, I've been told this was all coming. And here we are. They're pushing hard, harder now than ever. And they're calling it the Great Reset. They are working on making it happen. As I said earlier, the Pope released a document yesterday that actually uses that terminology and talks about a future which is coming after a Great Reset, and says that we should take advantage of life after the pandemic to accomplish that goal. It's happening. So we can't ignore the fact that it is happening and that there is intent in the anarchy that's happening right now. There's a lot of stuff happening. There's a lot of shiny, sparkly stuff in the air right now, distracting everybody and keeping everybody confused, and that's by design. You have to focus and start seeing the patterns, because once you start seeing the patterns, you can't unsee them. And I know that sounds like I should be wearing fatigues, camouflage, and living in my bunker with my food supply, but that's not me. That's not the guy I am. I'm just a guy. I mean, I'm just this guy who's worked in and out of the radio business and communications for a long time. Who's a tech nerd I'm a dad. I'm an uncle. I'm a great uncle. I mean, I'm just this guy. I'm your neighbor. I just happen to have paid attention and decided some years ago not to be distracted by all of the shiny. And what I see is the fulfillment of what I've heard for all of my life. It's beginning to happen all around us. And it's something we need to recognize. It's not paranoia. It's not conspiracy theory. Yeah, there's that old joke. Well, it's not paranoia if they're really out to get you. But it's not paranoia, I'm telling you. And we know that this is intentional, because you can't make these bad decisions just because you're dumb and be in. Like I keep telling you that Joe Biden's not running things. Okay, Joe Biden is just he's just a guy to attract the TV cameras. And what's actually generating everything is going on behind the curtain behind Joe Biden. I mean, Joe Biden isn't even the Wizard of Oz. The Wizard of Oz is behind the curtain making things happen. Joe Biden, if he's anything, is the guard at the palace, if he's anything. But that's all I can say about that. We know that this is intentional because we're hearing story after story. This one's coming from theblaze.com. Carlos Garcia writes this about what's happening in the Biden administration, which is causing what's happening on the border. A former Trump administration official says that the Biden administration was warned about loosening agreements that would precipitate a crisis at the border, but they ignored the warnings. Former State Department spokesperson Morgan Ortegas made these comments while a guest on Outnumbered on Fox News yesterday. Ortegas disputed statements from the Biden administration and then made her accusations, saying there was a dismantling of the system, but it wasn't by the Trump administration. If you'll let me be wonky for a second, there was something that we negotiated at the State Department and at DHS during the Trump administration. Two agreements. They're called ACAs, Asylum Cooperation Agreements, and ABSA, a Border Security Agreement. We negotiated these with Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador. I've been referring to these up until now, but now we're getting an explanation. And I spoke to a senior DHS official from the Trump administration this morning. We were talking about this. He told me that they repeatedly warned the Biden administration, the Biden team, not to unilaterally get rid of these agreements. These were not one-way agreements. These were bilateral agreements between the United States and these three countries related to exactly this, to border security, to asylum. They were all signed in 2019. And one of the reasons that we're seeing the influx today is because the Biden administration decided to get rid of these two ACAs and the BSA with Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador, and they had nothing in place. Nothing else was negotiated with these three countries. And again, it's a little bit of a wonky point, but I think it's worth knowing that the Trump DHS team did warn the incoming Biden team that there will be a surge at the border if you get rid of the agreements with these three countries without anything in place. So the Biden administration was warned by the Trump administration. The Trump administration, contrary to what the mainstream press has been telling everybody, the Trump administration actually was doing solid work when it came to international relationships. It was doing solid work. It was working. We had peace developing in the Middle East. We had agreements with nations that could not have been made before, but were made by a guy who understands how business works. And then we have these agreements with these three countries, which basically stopped the flood of people at our southern border. That combined with the wall did two things. One, it incentivized these three nations, Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador. It incentivized these three nations to stop the flow through their borders. And it also told those who were profiting from trafficking these people that we were serious. And it frightened them into not doing it anymore. We were building a wall on the southern border, which people were saying, people are still climbing over it. They're digging under it. They're cutting through it. Yeah, I get that. But still, if you put up a fence around your property, it serves two purposes. One, it keeps your pets or your kids from wandering off, so to speak. It keeps the neighbor's pets and kids from wandering in. Possibly if you have a pool, it's for their safety. And it also sends a signal. It sends a message to the people around you. Don't go in there. Not because we don't like you, not because we don't care about you, but we have a reason and you don't need to cross this line. But the Biden administration ignored what they were told by the Trump administration. Why? Because they're idiots? No. Because they have a plan. And part of that plan is to break the system. And they want to break the system so they can institute a new system. A new system built on Marxist theology, on Marxist ideology, on socialism, which doesn't benefit you, but tears down borders and victimizes you. The Daily Perspective Podcast. Hi there. About halfway through this midweek edition. Let's see here. That's not what I wanted to do. Come on. There we go. Update. Boom. All right. Now, I'm scanning social media during the break, and but the update was to linkreport.us. That's where the show notes are. As I go through the stories, I pop the articles up on the site so you can go download the articles. You can go look at the information. And I encourage you to do so because quite often there are links within those articles that help you broaden your understanding of what's in the articles themselves, because generally the articles are relatively short. They're just little quick news stories, but there is much supporting information which can be found through the links in the articles. So basically the links are like footnotes. You want to know what was said, for example, on Newsmax on March 14th about Biden's people meeting with the Chinese. Well, there's a link in the story. It's a story I'm about to do here. But I'm scanning social media. Oh, by the way, linkreport.us. I'm scanning social media. I'm on Twitter. And the local ABC affiliate here, ABC 3340, posts every day. And usually it's from a leftist perspective, and I shake my head and go, come on. And sometimes I actually will post in response, you know, really, really? And I want to just, here's just what this quick post said. There's a picture of a line worker. We have a Mercedes plant here, and we have a Honda plant. And we have some other automotive plants in Alabama. And there's a picture on this of one of the assembly lines. And the title says, discouraged workforce in Alabama may not look for new jobs after COVID-19 pandemic. Well, the reason is, it says discouraged workforce. Well, it's not that they're discouraged. Well, actually, I guess they have been. They've been discouraged for about working or looking for more jobs or looking for work again, because some of them are making just as much or more by staying home because the government's boosted their unemployment and they're not doing too bad. So why go back and work on the assembly line when you can just wait for that check to hit you every month? And that is part of the larger problem that we've been talking about so far. That we have an administration in place right now who wants to overwhelm our system, to change our system, to make it seem as though it's overburdened and can't function properly. And they're doing so by artificially overburdening it so that it breaks down, so that they can go on television, on the talking news shows on Sunday mornings and on the leftist news networks, and say that that capitalism has failed and we need to reform this system and approach a different things from a different direction, which goes back to what I was saying about the Great Reset, because that is the heart and soul of the Great Reset. It is the condemnation and elimination of capitalism, which has lifted nations from poverty, which has enabled people to change the destiny of their families, which has done more good for the world than anything these socialists pretend will do so. And President Trump warned us again and again about relationships, this nation having relationships with other nations, which would see our way of life destroyed, which would destroy capitalism, and yet, at their core, leech off of capitalism in order to survive. One of those nations is China. And over at epictimes.com, by the way, a news site run by, established by people for the sake of exposing the Chinese government for what it is. There's a story about the Biden officials meeting with China in Anchorage, Alaska. Former President Donald Trump told an advisor last week he would never grant the Chinese Communist Party a meeting in Anchorage, Alaska, like the one planned by the Biden administration for tomorrow. According to Jason Miller, an advisor to Trump, the former president said that he would make the Chinese come over to Washington to have a meeting. The fact that Joe Biden is having his team meet in Anchorage is not in Washington shows he's already trying to be deferential to the Chinese. He's already capitulating to the Chinese. So Miller said to Newsmax on March 14th. He adds, I spoke with President Trump about this last night, and he said he would never go and do that. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken and National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan are scheduled to meet with the CCP's top diplomats, Director of the Office of the Central Commission for Foreign Affairs, Yang Jiechi, and State Control Counselor Wang Yi, tomorrow in Anchorage. This is according to the State Department. The meeting with the Chinese will take place after Blinken's trip to Japan and North Korea. The South China Morning Post was the first to report that the Biden administration's first meeting with China would take place in Alaska. Alaska is a geographical midway point between the continental United States and China. The White House didn't respond to a request for comment. Biden spoke with CCP leader Xi Jinping on February 10th. During that call, he called out the communist regime's human rights abuses, unfair economic practices, and the crackdown in Hong Kong. Biden's committed to pursuing practical, results-oriented engagements when it advances the interests of the American people and those of our allies, according to a White House readout of the conversation. Can I just say this, that of course he called out the human rights abuses. Of course he called out the unfair economic practices. Of course he called out the crackdown in Hong Kong. If he had not, then he would have set himself up for amazing criticism and exposure. He went through the motions. He danced the dance. He did what he needed to do to keep the criticism as low as possible. It was all just performance art, nothing more. During his first speech after leaving the White House, Trump criticized the Biden administration's approach to China. On February 28th in Orlando, he said, companies that leave America to create jobs in China and other countries that have ripped us off for years should not be rewarded. They should be tariffed, fined, and punished. They should not be rewarded. That's what the Biden administration is doing. But of course, as you know, they have a very close personal relationship with China. So I don't expect much to happen. It's a shame, because it really is a threat. It's a tremendous economic threat. And it is. China is a tremendous economic threat. We've allowed them to run roughshod over us economically. And the Trump administration was actually doing the difficult work of rectifying that inequity, trying to make things actually more fair, because we had made some very bad deals with China and they were taking advantage of us. But Joe Biden and the Biden administration, the people behind the curtain, really don't have a problem with China. In fact, they like China. And they like China's philosophy. Now, in public, they will say, oh, it's a darn shame what they're doing to people there, the human rights abuses, yada, yada, yada. But in private, they will acknowledge to each other, well, that's kind of necessary if people won't, you know, people aren't going to go along with what you've got, the good that you're doing for them. You have to take those people, you have to teach those people a lesson. And that kind of idea, that kind of mentality is dangerous. Because that's saying that the people are too stupid to understand what's good for them. And when they resist, you should deal with them harshly. Which, when you think about it, is kind of the way the Democrats see life in America. The way the leftist politicians, regardless of the label they wear, see life in America. They see themselves as necessary, as an elite group of people who are there for the good of those who were too dumb to take care of themselves. We need government because they're smarter and they know better. Remember what I've told you so many times, that progressives wholeheartedly believe that they are intellectually and morally superior. They are smarter, and because they're smarter, they care more. They know better, and they care more about everything. They are better than you. And you should never forget that. That is the essential attitude coming from the left. And when you look at what they believe and compare it to what the Chinese Communist Party believes, they believe that everything they do is for the good of the people. And they lie to the people and tell them that the government is the people. It isn't. You look at the examples of the people who are in government versus the people who are not, and you see that the people in government have everything they need, and the people who are not barely have what they need to survive. And the same holds true for every nation which has moved through the promise of socialism into communism. Remember, socialism is just communism with patience. It's biding its time. Because eventually, it'll get what it wants. Just look at Venezuela as an example. They were promised equality, equity, if you will, if we can put it in the terminology of today's Democrat. They were promised equity. And what they have now is starvation. But the leaders of Venezuela are all fat cats living well. And that's what happens every time that ideology takes charge of a nation. Time for the wrap-up segment. Yeah, because I got to go tie myself to that pole in the garage here after we get through. Seriously, it's going to be a bumpy day around here. A lot of us here in the Southeast are prepping, I should say, for a pretty nasty day. Let's take a turn away from what's happening in D.C. and the planned destruction of everything we hold dear here. And let's talk about a social issue for this final segment. Dennis Prager, from time to time, he'll write something that I have to share with you. And you know, he makes these videos for PragerU. Excuse me. I need to I need to oil this crazy chair. It's driving me nuts. Anyway, if I would be still, I wouldn't have an issue. But Dennis Prager puts these videos up at PragerU, and then his people post the transcripts onto social media. And this one hit me because it's a good encapsulation of an issue that we face here in the United States. Over the summer of last year, you watched people rioting, you watched people burning, you watched people committing acts of violence. In the news, you read every Monday about the number of people who were shot in Chicago. In the news, you hear about violence going on in cities, and it's in minority communities primarily. And sadly, there is a core issue at the heart of every bit of that, and that is fatherhood. And Dennis Prager has a piece about the importance of fathers. I just wanted to share that with you today. He says, years ago, I interviewed Kwesi Mfume, then the president of the NAACP. Quote, as between the presence of white racism and the absence of black fathers, I asked, which poses the bigger threat to the black community? Without missing a beat, he said, the absence of black fathers. It was President Barack Obama who said, we all know the statistics that children who grow up without a father are 5 times more likely to live in poverty and commit crime, 9 times more likely to drop out of school, and 20 times more likely to end up in prison. The Journal of Research on Adolescence confirms that even after controlling for varying levels of household income, kids in father-absent homes are more likely to end up in jail. And kids who never had a father in the house are the most likely to wind up behind bars. In 1960, 5% of America's children entered the world without a mother and father married to each other. By 1980, it was 18%. By the year 2000, it had risen to 33%. And 15 years later, the number reached 41%. For blacks, even during slavery, when marriage for slaves was illegal, black children were more likely than today to be raised by both their mother and father. Economist Walter Williams has written that, according to census data, from 1890 to 1940, a black child was more likely to grow up with married parents than a white child. For blacks, out-of-wedlock births have gone from 25% in 1965 to 73% in 2015. For whites, from less than 5% to over 25%. And for Hispanics, out-of-wedlock births have risen to 53%. What happened to fathers? The answer is found in a basic law of economics. If you subsidize undesirable behavior, you will get more undesirable behavior. In 1949, the nation's poverty rate was 34%. By 1965, it was cut in half to 17%, all before President Lyndon Johnson's so-called war on poverty. But after that war began in 1965, poverty began to flatline. From 1965 until now, the government has spent over $20 trillion to fight poverty. The poverty rate has remained unchanged, but the relationship between poor men and women has changed dramatically. That's because our generous welfare system allows women, in effect, to marry the government. And this makes it all too easy for men to abandon their traditional moral and financial responsibilities. Psychologists call such dependency learned helplessness. How do we know that the welfare state creates disincentives that hurt the very people we're trying to help? They tell us. In 1985, the Los Angeles Times asked both the poor and the non-poor whether poor women often have children to get additional benefits. Most of the non-poor respondents said no. However, 64% of the poor respondents said yes. Now, who do you think is in a better position to know? Tupac Shakur, the late rapper, once said, I know for a fact that I had a father. If I had a father, I'd have some discipline. I'd have more confidence. He admitted he began running with gangs because he wanted the things a father gives to a child, especially to a boy, structure and protection. Shakur said, "Your mother cannot calm you down the way a man can. You need a man to teach you how to be a man." In my book, Dear Father, Dear Son, I write about my rough, tough World War II Marine Staff Sergeant Dad. Born in the Jim Crow South of Athens, Georgia, he was 14 at the start of the Great Depression. Growing up, I watched my father work two full-time jobs as a janitor. He also cooked for a rich family on the weekends and somehow managed to go to night school to get his GED. When I was 10, my father opened a small restaurant that he ran until he retired in his mid-80s. He was never angry or bitter and insisted that today's America was very different from the world of racial segregation and limited opportunity in which he grew up. "Hard work wins," he told me and my brothers. "You get out of life what you put into it. You can't control the outcome, but you are 100% in control of the effort. And before blaming other people, go to the nearest mirror and ask yourself, what could I have done to change the outcome?" This advice shaped my life. Fathers matter. Until we have a government policy that makes that its first priority, nothing will change. Wise words from Mr. Larry Elder for Prager University. Politicians ignore the fact that what's needed today is not more funding for people to help them out of their problems, but actually a moral structure for life. Because when the government becomes the father in the family, that means there's not a dad there, there's just a check. And that check can't walk along besides a growing child and give it the guidance that only a father figure can. And interestingly, those who believe in the power of government believe it has a moral obligation to do exactly that. But it fails every time it tries. It attempts to be the father figure. But it can't. It can't be that. It's not a dad. It's a huge entity that cuts checks and throws money at problems and can't shape the lives of those it claims to protect and care about. Remember, I said progressives believe they are intellectually and morally superior. They believe they're smarter and they care more. They care about the people. But every time they step in to help the people, they make their problems worse. Because people aren't a program. People need other people. People need guardrails in their lives. They need guidance. They need direction. And they need examples. Real, living, breathing, personal examples. We have example after example of examples. People who have come alongside troubled young people to give them the example they need. And there are success stories related to most of those examples. And the point is that until we recognize the fact that there is a problem in our society created by government, funding behavior which is bad for society, and we correct that issue, our society will never heal. Because people would rather have the check than to do the right thing. That's kind of basic human nature, taking that path of least resistance. And once again, government fails. We're a living, breathing person with a moral compass will succeed. Just a little food for thought for your Wednesday. Have a good one. If we don't get blown away, we'll see you back here tomorrow. God bless. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.